950. Hello, members. Hello. I am talking only to the members right now. Thank you. Thank you very much for being a member of AM 950. We truly do appreciate it. And going on the truth, this is trying times, not only for the radio industry, but all industry out there. And, you know, we feel as if we serve a good purpose here in Minnesota, trying to give you at least some one viewpoint from the left in media in this state. And so we do appreciate everyone who's become a member and has been part of AM 950. And that's why we're doing some of these great interviews with you. And we're going to also, revisit one or two interviews. And that's what I'm doing here right now is we're going to, they're going to be interviews that we did that were really good interviews that have warranted me wanting to come back and revisit them and talk a little bit more about them, put them in a little bit more of a context as you'll hear the interview. And I wanted to specifically bring up the Jesse Diggins interview that we did. Brave Enough by Jesse Diggins is a book that came on out from the University of Minnesota Press. And we had her on. It wasn't that long ago, actually. We had her on. I got an interesting, story about her because I want to make sure we understand. This is the iconic moment from that Olympics. Here comes Diggins. Here comes Diggins, screaming as the United States won their first ever gold medal period, I believe it was, in cross country skiing, and barely beating out by the tip of a ski. The Swedes, I think it was the Sweden that was there. It might have been Norway. And needless to say, we won the gold, so we were first place. I don't really care that much attention to who else is. It was us going USA, USA. The truly amazing thing about Jesse Diggins was when after I did this interview, kind of thinking back to what she did and how it hasn't changed her. And this, I think, is one of the reasons why, to a point, there are some of the women's sports out there I enjoy actually more than the men's sports. And this is just me personally. But it's there are some of these sports. I mean, I can talk about the physical wherewithal of, like, the U.S. soccer team. I mean, there was a goal where the midfielder shoots a ball 120 feet in the air on a dime to hit the header into the goal. It was just amazing. I mean, there's stuff like that. I mean, there's that kind of thing. But sometimes you have to understand the different perspective that, especially as we go through this, that women's sports works at. I was working at a radio station, KASI, KCCQ, down in Ames, Des Moines, Iowa. And back then, we used to do stuff with the Iowa State Cyclones. We were the flagship for the Cyclone Radio Network, and so we did a lot of stuff with the Cyclones. And I, because the program director wanted to do the men's games, I was put to the half-court shot we'd have at the beginning of the second half of a women's basketball game. They'd send me on out, and I'd go down on the court at Hilton Coliseum, and I'd look up at the crowd, and, "Hey, everybody, I'm Matt McNeil." It would be about a total of maybe 4,000 people in the stands. I mean, some of the big games, some of the big rivalries, we'd get closer to 8,000, 9,000, but still it was not any close to a sellout. And I remember sitting on press row, which back then at Hilton Coliseum was just a series of tables that was right on the court side, but gave you a great perspective, and these are great seats. And it was remarkable because I sat there and outside of one other media guy, no one else was there. And every other – and you'd go down there and you'd sit on press row and they'd have the names of the media people who are, and what radio station they were from, who are they coming out. But none of the media people came out to these games. And I quickly was like, wow, you guys are missing because this was – this is the days – the Iowa State Cyclone team was quite good back then. And it was a completely – different game than the men's game. I mean, it has evolved into what I call a more pure form of basketball. No one doesn't like a guy running seven steps in the paint and traveling like crazy and then throwing down a monster jam to where the announcer's going, ho ho, in the background. Everyone, I mean, that's the NBA. Trash talking in your face, physicality. To watch the women's basketball team set up a play, and you can watch it happen, set up a play, pass it around, beat the defense, get the shot off. I mean, it was just a much more enjoyable game to watch. I mean, it was, you know, frankly, in my personal opinion, chess to checkers. And nothing against checkers. I played plenty of games of checkers in my life, but it's kung, 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 king me. Versus, okay, how do I have to move this ball to get the score? That's what I liked about women's basketball. It was great. As a matter of fact, my wife was able to join me on the sidelines for these games. until some knuckleheads from one of the radio stations decided to get drunk in press row. Brought a bunch of their buddies, got drunk, and were cheering on press row. You don't cheer on press row. You can't cheer on press row. You're there as a work. So, I mean, if something really did go good, we'd put our hands underneath the table and clap. But no one could see us do that. You didn't cheer. You didn't stand up and go, yeah, in their face. You're on press row. And apparently these guys did. And that was the end of my wife at least going to those games. But we often enjoy that. When you look at Jessie Diggins, she does something sports-wise, which is pretty much the top of the heap. I mean, you don't get much better than this, than what happens to win an Olympic gold. First time U.S. does it, a grueling race. She gets a ski across, does it. But what you find out as you read that book, Brave Enough by Jessie Diggins, you realize how she got there. It took her whole life, and that she hasn't taken this moment for granted. There's a lot of people who would stop and, you know, basically be showing up at the county fair signing autographs for the rest of their lives because they wouldn't have to do anything. When we talked to her, we were trying to get in touch with her in Sweden. I think she was out there for doing the world circuit. She's still trying to stay in shape. She's, you know, she probably has some very good, you know, contracts, endorsement deals. But the reality is that's not her life. Her life is still trying to ski because she loves skiing. It's pure. It's real. It's not about the payoff at the end. It's about the love of the sport. And she truly is a really remarkable. I mean, I called her a true American badass, and she truly is. So please enjoy, listen to the Jessie Diggins. I felt so bad. She came back in town for that big race. And then everything got canceled. She was in town to do the press thing. So I'm glad we can feature this again. Jessie Diggins, Brave Enough, the book's from the University of Minnesota Press. I highly encourage you to get this book as well. Here is the Jessie Diggins interview that we did right here on AM 950. Joining me right now, very, very honored to have Jessie Diggins join us. Brave Enough is her brand new book. I believe it comes out here next week. She's kind enough to talk about not only her skiing career, but some of the stories she brings up in the book. Jessie, thank you very much. I really appreciate the time.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure.
Glad to be here.
Where are you at right now?
I'm just recovering after we had a really hard, slushy race in Drammen, Norway, and now I'm on the recovery train a little bit ahead of this last final push. We've got 6 races in 9 days coming up.
Wow.
Starting next weekend. So yeah, it's gonna be crazy. But yeah, just sort of laying low and recovering a little.
And I will mention here, you've been racing. You've gotten third in Italy and Germany as an individual, a team. You got in Lillehammer, you were in second in December. But boy, I mean, that is going to be, I imagine you're going to be pretty tired after all that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's incredible. Earlier this year, we finished up the Tour of Scandinavia, and it was also 6 races in 9 days, and it was, It's a big effort. It's a big push, but it's also this really cool adrenaline ride. You know, you're racing almost every single day. You're traveling in between. You're at different venues, and every day presents a totally unique challenge. So it's really fun. It's like being on one big thrill ride.
Of course, everyone knows you from the moment from the 2018 Olympics in Pyeongchang, the first ever cross-country gold medal for women's team sprint. You were with Keegan Randall was your teammate there. And you've written this book to talk a little bit about this because it is truly – it's one of those moments that happens in sports. And I know your perspective is very different than the rest of us. But it's one of those moments where, yeah, you've become iconic, that in 100 years people are going to look back at that Olympics. And your moment will be the moment people remember from that.
I mean, that's just mind-blowing to me because I think, you know, you're just going out – and doing your job and racing your race and going as hard as you can. And of course you are dreaming big and you realize it's the Olympics, you know, it's the biggest stage ever. And there's so much pressure and hype and excitement and nerves, But I think, you know, crossing the finish line, it didn't even sink in that we had won the Olympics. It just felt like the feeling of exhilaration when you cross the finish line of any race. And so I think it really didn't dawn on me until I got back to the United States that spring, realizing how big that moment felt and how much it meant to everyone. And, cause you can feel sort of disconnected when you're, you know, literally half a world away, and in totally different time zones, but coming back home, it was so cool to see how that moment, felt to all, many different families, kids, skiers. That was really humbling, for sure.
Your book, Brave Enough, once again, is going to be a sale. I believe it comes out here on the 10th, you wrote with Todd Smith. I love the beginning of your book because not only does it give you a great insight into your family life, I love the chapter you have on Thunder Bay I think what makes you very relatable is the fact that you are very relatable. And you talk about your experiences at the family cabin. I've got a family cabin as well, and it is just amazing how – as I was reading your chapter, I just kept thinking to myself, my cabin, that those 2 to 3 weeks every year you get to go spend with your family at a family cabin, those memories somehow supersede all the rest of those memories of your youth.
Yeah, isn't that just like the quintessential Minnesota upbringing, right?
Yeah.
Like getting outdoors, being with your friends, running around, like riding your bikes everywhere, like spending time at the cabin. And I feel so lucky to have had that experience and to develop such a love and appreciation for just getting outside, playing and adventuring and exploring. And I feel so fortunate. And it was really fun to tell, you know, not just the sort of Olympic glory type moments, but the backstory and what makes me who I am and you know, the fun moments, but also the challenging moments as well. It was really important to me to give the reader the whole picture.
Well, and you talk in the relatability of it. I mean, it really is. I mean, I have a daughter who's seventh grade and, you know, she's not cross-country skiing. She's soccer. But I love that. Like, do I really want to go practice 6 days a week? You know, those moments you have. But you seem to definitely have an affinity for cross-country skiing that showed up at a very young age.
Yeah, I think you know, I got to thank my parents for that one. I just inherited, you know, their skill sets and their love of the sport. And I did so many sports as a kid, and I loved that I got the chance to do them all. And it was clear that, you know, I love all these other sports, but cross country skiing, just I had this connection to the sport and this just epic love for the sport itself and the activity and just being outside with my friends and skiing all these different trails. I hope that is a relatable thing for everyone, because everyone has an activity, whether it's a sport or a hobby or something that they're just so passionate about where they're like, yeah, this is my thing.
You get into you had an eating disorder, and you actually talk about it for multiple chapters, including talking about your experience with the EMILY program. That must have been, I mean, that's always difficult when people have something like that to talk about this. But you write about it extensively because you want to make, you know, help people that go through this. It was your senior year of high school that all of a sudden you had an eating disorder that developed.
Yeah, you know, like I said earlier, it was important to me to show, you know, the bumps in the road and the hard moments as well as the great moments. And I found that, you know, it is scary and hard to share the unglamorous parts of my story, but in vulnerability, there is strength. And this is something that a lot of people deal with. You know, statistically speaking, everybody knows somebody at some point who either has had an eating disorder or will have one or will go through body image struggles. I mean, I think everyone can relate to the feeling of not feeling super confident or loving their body at some point in their life. And for me, it became, you know, it was a way of dealing with stress. And at first it started out as a coping mechanism, and then my eating disorder, you know, took over my life. And I was able to, you know, get help, get treatment at the EMILY program, and get a lot of support from my family. And it was important to me to write about, you know, here's how I got into my eating disorder. Here were, you know, the warning signs, and here's how I got out of it. And I'm hoping that, you know, it's not the entire book. It's, you know, like it wasn't my entire life. It was part of my life and something that I went through, but it didn't define my life. in that same way, it's part of the book. It doesn't define the book, but I really hope that those chapters can be a really good resource and sort of help people learn more about here's what it's really like inside the mind of someone struggling with an eating disorder. And in that same category, any sort of addiction, you know, it's that same struggle. And here's how, you know, the support that really helped me. So I'm hoping it can really help athletes and parents and coaches and friends and teammates.
Brave. There's a difference between, you know, being successful on in a sporting event and then being able to take that and then trying to help other people to avoid, you know, problems that you have had. I think that is amazingly brave. And I know that was those are difficult chapters that you talk about. You did get out of that with a lot of help and a lot of support. You made the decision at 19 to be a professional cross country skier. I've talked to other athletes, pro athletes. The change, they say, when you make, especially on a sport like it is one of the Olympic sports, and you decide you're going to dedicate yourself to this, they say that change immediately, that you're in a very different world, that you're approaching it at a much different level. Talk about those early days when you said, I'm going pro on this. I'm going to, you know, you obviously went to the U.S. Olympic team. I think in 2012 was your first year on that team. Talk about that jump, because, I mean, that is a huge difference between skiing in high school or even skiing at college and then all of a sudden going pro.
Yeah, it is a big jump, because suddenly it's not just this awesome sport and a hobby that you love, but it's your job as well. It's your life. It's, it's, you know, it's how you support yourself. And it's really, you know, I'm not going to say it's all you have, because I'm more complex than that. I have other areas of my life that I focus on and other things I do, but it is your primary objective and everything revolves around it, and getting the workout done, getting the training done, that has to come first. And so it is this big shift, and some parts of learning how to be a professional are little things, just like, you know, eat, drink, dry clothes after a workout, like making sure you are prepared, that you have everything you need to make the workout and the recovery afterwards go smoothly. But I think, it's just little changes that add up and make you realize, okay, like, being a professional requires a little more sacrifice and a little more attention to detail. But I was actually okay with that. I was so on board with that, because I've always been someone who likes having all their eggs in one basket. You know, I don't want to be half in, half out on a few things. I want to be all in on one thing and do it as well as I possibly can. And so that's sort of the attitude I adopted, was, all right, like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to go for it. I'm going to go all in and give it everything I have and see how far I can take it. And that way, you know, if I win or if I lose, I can look back and honestly say, wow, like, I gave this my absolute best effort. I tried as hard as I could, and I'll never be wondering what if. Like, I never want to have to ask myself that. I never want the what if question lingering in my head.
And it's not cheating yourself. I love the chapter, because 96 isn't 100. You know, because you do something I've had other friends do, where they do, you were roller skiing. You were going to 100K in one day, and then you discover at the end, oh, we actually didn't go. You were 4 kilometers short. And you're like, well, we got 4 more kilometers to do.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, every summer I pick one big epic challenge. So the, you know, roller skiing 100 kilometers in one day, it took, you know, 6.5 to 7 hours. And so you've been skiing for 6.5 hours. You're super tired. You think you're done, and you look down at the GPS and your watch, and you're like, oh no, what have I done? You know, like, we made a big mistake here. Somebody's math was wrong. And it's, but for me, this is a little bit of a defining characteristic of who I am. Like, not even for a second did I think it would be okay to just stop. I was like, well, I have to finish the 100. Like, I'm not there yet. Like, of course I need to be done. Like, just because I hit the marker where I'd planned to be done, you know, I'm not there yet. I have to see it through. The workout comes first, and the commitment to excellence comes first. And so it's just that pure stubborn streak, I think, that gets me through training.
I'm not going to talk too much about the Olympics experience, because I want people to buy the book. Once again, Brave Enough, Jesse Diggins with Todd Smith. That's going to be out here next week. I want people to buy the book, and you go into great detail about that race, the gold medal race. But I want to just say this as a fan myself. You went on the outside corner twice. You cut between two skiers and you won a all-out sprint at the very end. There's just two words for that: badass. That is amazing. Because what you did, I mean, there's so many people that were in that same exact situation would have quit because you had to literally take the toughest course to win, and you did it.
Oh, thank you. Well, it was fun working on those chapters because it was, you know, I had to really put myself back in that moment. And it's fun to share with readers, like, here's exactly what I was thinking. Real time strategic decisions, why I made those decisions, why I moved, when I did, and how I did. And it's really fun to share that because I think cross country skiing, you know, for a long time, people kind of thought, oh, they just put on planks of wood and they slide around in circles in the woods, you know, like that's what they do. And yeah, we can do that. But for sure, the sport is so dynamic and powerful and there's strategy and tactics involved. And it's really fun to get to share that incredibly exhilarating side of the sport with fans. So yeah, it was really, really a hoot to write those chapters.
After you won the gold, I mean, obviously this is, you created a standard for the U.S. cross country ski team. Did the rest of the world treat you differently? Was all of a sudden it was no longer, oh, there's the United States, they'll finish 12th. You know, was all of a sudden like, okay, now we've got to really take these guys seriously.
Yeah. You know, I think that has happened, but it's been a little more gradual than the Olympics, because I think by the time we got to the Olympics, like I had multiple World Cup podiums. We had multiple wins from not just myself, but a lot of members of our team were on the podium and winning races and showing like, hey, you know, give me the right skis and on the right day, I can nail this race. And so I think, you know, gradually over time, we had shown that we're here to play and we're here to win and we're serious competitors, but also we have a lot of fun. And I think we've had a lot of respect from the rest of the World Cup crew, as we respect every other team, you know, like you see people, the level of sacrifice and training and just guts that you have to get to that level, you got to respect it. So I think there's this amazing camaraderie on the World Cup. And I have friends from pretty much every single team around the world because, you know, yeah, at the end of the day, you line up on the starting line and you want to beat the person standing next to you, but also you have to respect what it took for them to get there.
And all you have to do, by the way, is take a look at Jesse's, you know, career. You'll see quite a few podium stances, including a lot of championships over her career. Keegan, when you raced with her, I believe she was mid-30s. We got Beijing coming up here in 2022. Italy, I think, is in 2026. I'm presuming you're saying you're planning on being at the next few Olympics, correct?
Oh, I'm not making any promises. Okay. I have to qualify first. But
okay.
I am for sure planning on racing through the end of the Beijing Olympics. And after that, I'm gonna see, you know, I'm going to take it day by day. And I've always said, you know, if I'm not enjoying and loving what I'm doing, then I'm going to know it's time to retire. Because it takes so much work that if you're not absolutely loving the process and the training and the travel and the absolutely incredibly gut-wrenching process of tearing your body apart every time you race, you know, then it's not worth it. But if you're loving it, then regardless of results, this is, you know, there's nothing else in the world I would rather be doing. So I think as I get older and I have, you know, other goals on the horizon as well and family goals and all sorts of other things going on, you know, I'll see how I'm feeling. But right now in this moment, like it still feels like I could be skiing forever. I'm absolutely loving what I'm doing. And I feel like this is, yeah, there's literally nothing else in the world that I would rather do.
And I hope you do, because you make me proud to be Minnesotan. You make me proud to be American. And you're just one of those people that is just, you're so kind of, you give people hope. You give people great memories and people just enjoy you. This is just such a treat for me. I got to tell you the truth. I'm geeked out talking to you. And I mean, I talked to a lot of people and I'm like, I don't get excited about this, but I'm just deeply inside a little kid doing, you know, somersaults right now, because talking to you is just a delight.
Oh man, I'm not actually that cool.
Well, I think your actions, all that stuff changed that. No, you are that cool. And it just, thank you very much. I appreciate the time today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Love being a guest.
Brave Enough, Jesse Diggins with Todd Smith. The book is out next week. Jesse, thank you very much. All my best on these next upcoming races you have, and we hope to see you in Beijing.
Awesome. See you there.
Take care.